or even times when I've been able to manage my life well, but was miserable in my job, my husband's had to kind of call me out and say, I know you think you're leaving it at the office, but you're not. Like, you're miserable when you get home because you brought that home with you. And so realizing just being happy at work made me much happier at home as well, which made me a better wife, mom, friend, daughter, mother, whatever it was.
Welcome to Authentic Energy, a podcast dedicated to getting to the bottom of what it means to be your true, authentic self at work. I am your host, Wendy Brand, a former corporate executive turned transformation coach. Let's take this learning journey together as I meet with guests weekly to learn how they've managed or not managed to find the elusive boundaries and success in their career and what it really means to find balance. Welcome back to the Authentic Energy Podcast. Welcome to those that are just joining for the first time. And for those of you that have listened before, thank you. It means so much to me that we are on this journey together. Before I tell you about our next guest, I want to remind you about my free coaching sessions. As I progress through my coaching certification program, I need to provide introductory coaching sessions free of charge and free of commitment, and I would love to offer this up to human resource leaders. Your role serves as coach to so many, but you rarely get coaching of your own, and as you know, coaching can be such a valuable tool for development and growth, no matter where you are in the stage of your career, whether you're just starting out or moving into a director or VP role, or even if you're at the C-suite level. I didn't start out in HR, but my career brought me into HR and talent strategy almost 15 years ago, and I developed a love for working cross-functionally, rolling out people systems and tools, building employee programs that fostered engagement, and training programs that reached tens of thousands of employees. I know that the role of an HR leader can be burdensome. The nurturing of talent and culture is not solely your responsibility, but it lies firmly in your court. So if you or someone you know would like to receive a free 45-minute coaching session on the topic of your choice, visit my website at wendybrandcoaching.com/free to sign up for your session. Now, the reason that you tuned in. I have an amazing guest today on the show. I believe I have found a guest that has figured out the pieces that were missing, at least in my career growth, but it is her superpower. Kelly Hopping is currently the Chief Marketing Officer for Haiku, where she is responsible for increasing brand presence and accelerating acquisition and conversion of potential customers. On the podcast today, you will learn what makes her a great leader, a phenomenal mother, and a woman that knows her non-negotiables and is not afraid to ask for what she wants. Prior to joining Haiku, Kelly served as the Chief Marketing Officer for the Digital Markets Division of Gartner, where she managed a portfolio of brands to grow awareness and demand in the market. Kelly served as Vice President of Integrated Solutions and Product Marketing for Rackspace, which is where I met her, and where she was responsible for identifying, productizing, and launching multiple cloud solutions based on customer demands and industry verticals. And for 5 years before joining Rackspace, Kelly led various marketing, communications, and business operations positions at AMD. She holds an MBA from Harvard Business School and a Bachelor of Science in Industrial Engineering from Texas A&M University. She serves on the board of Empowering Women as Leaders Austin, and she has spoken at various leadership conferences and mentor roundtables. Kelly currently resides in Austin, Texas with her husband and three children, but today she is on the Authentic Energy Podcast. So without further ado, Kelly Hopping.
Kelly, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. I'm so excited to have you on. Can we just start by you introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about your career and where you are today?
Sure. Thanks for having me. My name is Kelly Hopping. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer at a company called Haiku, spelled H-Y-C-U. It's a startup in the data protection space. I've been here just over a year. Prior to that, I've worked in tech for the last 12 or 13 years, I guess, between Dell, AMD, Gartner, Rackspace. And I'm an engineer out of college. And I went back to grad school, focused on business, and have been in marketing ever since.
Awesome. That's interesting. I didn't realize you studied engineering. I knew you in marketing and not that you'd...
Yeah, I never actually was an engineer, but I went to Texas A&M and I was like, I want to get the best degree I can get from A&M, and they're an engineering school predominantly, and or that's what they're known for. So I got my degree in industrial engineering, and I went into interview for a summer internship the night or my last summer between before graduation. And the guy I interviewed with, we just really connected, and I had asked sort of very blunt questions like, well, do I ever get to work with people? Because I didn't want to be an engineer. I just wanted the engineering degree. I was good at math and science. And he would just laughed and then and kind of, you know, assured me that was fine. But then they had a reorg at his company, or at Sabre, the company. And he moved from product development to product marketing. And he called me and he was like, I remember that you really wanted to work with people. What do you think about moving with me and interning in product marketing instead? And I was like, that'd be great. And he said, because we had a reorg today, and so tomorrow when you start. And I was like, okay. And I've been in marketing ever since. So that one phone call changed my entire career.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. And so tell me about your definition of success in your career. And has it changed over time?
I think so. I never had a goal, to be honest. I wasn't ever like, I want to be in the C-suite by the time I'm 40, or I want to be a vice president by 30, or I never had any of that. My goal was always to love what I was doing and to love it enough to leave my family every day when that time came. So even when I was 22, 23, I thought, one day I'm going to get married. One day I'm going to have kids. And I better enjoy where I'm going, or else I'm going to the wrong spot. And so that was always my goal. And again, you don't know that until you're in a job, if that's the case, but it doesn't take long in a job to realize this is not worth the sacrifice that I'm making at home. Or even times when I've been able to manage my life well, but was miserable in my job, my husband's had to kind of call me out and say, I know you think you're leaving it at the office, but you're not. Like, you're miserable when you get home because you brought that home with you. And so realizing just being happy at work made me much happier at home as well, which made me a better wife, mom, friend, daughter, mother, whatever it was.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah. Do you feel like you've ever been in a job that you weren't playing to your strengths? I mean, it sounds like it's kind of evolved. Like, you went from engineering or studying engineering and being an intern to getting into marketing. So it wasn't your strengths, probably weren't what you thought your strengths were from the beginning. What has that looked like for you as it unfolded?
Yeah. I mean, you know, my strengths have evolved over time for sure. I mean, I think the soft skills get better, right? Those you can't rush. I always tell folks who are like, I've done all the things, now can I get promoted? And I'm like, it takes more than just checking off a skill. It also takes time and sort of experience, and you know, the softer skills just can't be rushed. So those have evolved over time. I think in my career, what I would say is most often I've been able to tap into what I'm great at. I'm an achiever. That's my number one. And it's in every different, if it's Myers, I mean, if it's what's the one with the Enneagram, I'm a Enneagram 3, which is achiever. If it's the Gallup strengths, I'm achiever. Like, it shows up in
every test. Yeah.
And so that can shine in most jobs. It's the other parts where I don't get as much. So in Gallup strengths, my like 2, 3, 4 are woo, positivity, communication, and responsibility. So usually 1 in 5, I can hit pretty good. If I'm not in sort of a leadership capacity or an influence capacity, or even just a program management, something, then I sort of lose some of the others. And so those are the roles where I've struggled. So for example, the only job I can remember that was absolutely the wrong fit, I had been in marketing most of my career. And when I was at AMD, I had been asked to be the chief of staff for the CEO. She was the COO at the time. And so I moved over and I was her chief of staff, and I actually thrived there. Again, it wasn't marketing, but it was a place to impact strategy, decision-making, you know, communication from her office, all that kind of stuff. So I still thrived there, but then I was promoted back into the business unit, but in an operations role. And that was not me. It was, especially in the Silicon world, it was a semiconductor company. And so operations meant like managing production yields of silicon from a factory in Taiwan and managing that supply chain. And I was like, this is not my jam. Like I, you know, my engineering background, industrial engineering, which is statistics and operations and things sort of lent itself, but it was not my happy place. And I did not know the business well enough in that space to thrive. And it was pretty clear. And I thought, this is not moving me in the direction of where I wanted to go. And again, I didn't need to go up to the C-suite, but I needed to be continuing to sort of sharpen my craft and build my toolkit. And that felt like a vast detour in the wrong direction. I thought, I need to get back on the path I know and or where I want to go. And then I moved back into brand and marketing over at Rackspace after that. But
that's interesting that you were, I mean, it's cool that you were aware enough that you noticed that and were able to kind of pivot. Did you have to leave? Did you leave a company or you left just a role?
I left a company. So I'd been at AMD, like I said, in the chief of staff role, and I moved into the AMD into a business unit.
Okay.
Because it was operational in nature, I felt like the GM of that business unit sort of took me on as like his chief of staff. And I was like, no. I didn't go from being the COO's chief of staff to being like your chief of staff. So that's, and then it was managing all these things that were sort of outside of my wheelhouse, but also outside of my interest. And fortunately, my friend Dave, who was leading corporate comms over at, or corporate marketing over at Rackspace, called not long after, within a couple months, and was like, I have a role for you. I need you to build a brand team and a central marketing team. And so I went over there. So I was only in the role maybe 4 months. I was at AMD for 5 years. I was in that role for about 4 months and then transitioned out to Rackspace.
And how long were you there?
4.5 years.
Okay.
So I probably had 4 or 5 jobs in 4.5 years. So I came in as a director of brand with a team of 6. And then I was promoted into a senior director role overall of central marketing for a while. And then I got moved out into the product organizations to stand up a solutions marketing team and vertical marketing. And then they had me centralize all of product marketing under me there. So I went from a director to a VP in those 4.5 years. And I went from brand to campaigns, strategy to vertical marketing to product marketing. So a lot of different roles, but I got to learn a lot of skills and work for many different leaders in that time. And, you know, it all rounded me out at the end.
That's the cool thing about being at a high growth, fast growth company like Rackspace was, and being able to kind of, I had a similar experience where I started in IT as a business analyst, became a project manager, program manager, which put me into HR because I was brought in to roll out our HR system. Mm-hmm. And then HR is where I went back and got my master's degree. And so it really, I kind of, you know, floated around, but got just such a great breadth of experience.
You've done that whole functional shift then too.
Yeah.
And it's pretty dramatic, but I think it makes you, especially as HR and maybe similar to marketing, but it makes you appreciate your constituents or, you know, the
yes.
people you're supporting, because IT is a function you could be supporting through that's HR. Right. And I think that's the same thing with marketing. I'm supporting product and engineering, which is where I come, you know, where I came from originally. So I think it's, it all happens for a reason, Wendy.
Yes, it does. And then, so after Rackspace, where did you go?
I left Rackspace, 4.5 years. My previous CMO at Rackspace, who had been my advocate and had promoted me there, had left about a year before me and gone to, she had taken a year off, that's what it was, and she traveled around the world. And in that time, so she had gotten a call to go be the CMO at Gartner in their small business division. But it was right when she had accepted a role as the CMO at National Instruments. And so she said, hey, I've already accepted a job, but my friend Kelly Hopping at Rackspace would be a great fit. And so they called me it was a great opportunity. There was a ton of change going on at Rackspace. And so it was a good pivoting moment to exit. And I went over to Gartner to be the CMO there. for their small business division called Gartner Digital Markets, which is a combination of Capterra Software Advice and GetApp, which were all small companies that were acquired by Gartner. And so I ran marketing for that little conglomerate for about 2 years. I had a great time there. I had a blast. I had about 110 folks on the team, really robust marketing dollars because it was a digital business. So marketing sort of owned all of the demand gen and all of the all the revenue number. And so I shouldn't have left if I'm honest, but a friend of mine from Rackspace, I'd been sort of batting 1,000 at friends taking me from one company to the next, And so I sort of trusted that those were all going to work out because I just had amazing experiences following that. So a friend from Rackspace had gone to a small company, which was a freelance talent on demand company. There were so many red flags during the interview process. And for some reason I accepted the job anyway. I think I'm, you know, my love language is words of affirmation. And I think the flattery maybe gets to me. Plus it was a very robust and lucrative offer. And much more so than I was at. And so it was one of those like red flags. If I hate it, you know, if I do it for a year, I can afford to take a year off based on the new salary. Let's try this. And it ended up not being the right culture fit. It was an environment that did not mesh well with me. I was, my personality, and wanting to sort of own and drive and lead change, just didn't work. I think as a marketer in general, I think that, it can be a challenge being a CMO for a founder led company. Founders have a hard time. Some founders, I work for a great founder now. Some founders can, they've started the company from scratch. And so they can't separate their brand from the company brand, which puts handcuffs on a CMO whose job is to grow the brand. And so it ended up being sort of a really regular position of clashing. And that was not, a place I wanted to be. So the CEO and I didn't see eye to eye on a lot of that, which was fine. And so I finally asked him to fire me. I told him that I was, that I disagreed with a lot of or all of the direction that he gave me, that I didn't agree it was good marketing. I actually thought it was poor marketing, and that if he was going to drive all the decision making, then he should hire like a $70,000 a year program manager to execute all of his whims and save the money from me.
Did you actually say that to him?
Those are my exact words were, yes, you should fire me. Like there is, I was like, I fundamentally disagree with 80% of what you tell me to do. So you should find somebody who won't push back, who will just execute everything that you want them to do. And you should save a whole lot of money in doing so. And so, he thought about it for a week or so. And then our head of HR called and said, all right, I heard that you wanted to get fired. And so, we're going to let you go. And that allowed me to take a 6-month sabbatical, which was freeing and amazing and such a healthy refresh and kind of recovery time for me to rest and think and breathe for the first time in a long time.
So I want to hear more about the sabbatical, but I also want to hear because what a brave, bold move and what awareness you had that it wasn't, you were listening to yourself and what you needed to be true to yourself and to stay true to what you wanted and what your purpose was. And so, first of all, how long were you there in that role?
4 months.
Okay.
And I will say, and that's the shortest I've ever been at a job, right? I'm always in years, not months. And I was there 4 months. My first day, my first meeting, I knew that I'd made a mistake. Literally 9 a.m. my first day. We were in a staff meeting and our product guy who lived overseas, asked if we could move a 4 o'clock meeting to earlier in the day, because it would have been midnight his time. And he said, can we do it earlier? And then I listened to my boss scream at him for 30 straight minutes for inconveniencing everybody. Wow. And I thought, what did I just do? Why did I come here? Fortunately, I had an amazing team. I had brilliant people under me. And I sort of turned into mother hen a little bit. Like I felt immediately the need to protect them from, you know, from the direction and the confusion and the sort of toxicity they were receiving from the leadership. And so that's what kept me, I think, even there for 4 months, was because I saw that they really responded to me. We clicked very, very quickly, because I think they were thankful just to have a filter in between.
Yeah. And do you think you were able to provide that protection in that 4 months that you were there? I mean, yeah.
Yes, a little bit. I mean, as long as I could in 4 months, I would still watch my team get just blasted publicly, shamed, you know, in front of, I say public, within the walls of our company on a call with 100 people, just get screamed at. And so the most I could do is kind of raise my hand and say, hey, that's on me. I was the one who approved that. Or, hey, I was the one who authorized that. Or I was the one who suggested they present this today. If you're going to be mad, take it out on me. And so that was about as much as I could do. And I think the team appreciated that. It's just tough when you work in a culture that doesn't welcome an outside idea, then you, and it shows up in the way that leadership responds. I think it creates a lot of yes people and just kills innovation and creativity.
Yeah.
And in that environment, I realized that I had walked into an organization where the leadership team had been strategically chosen to nod their head and say, yes, sir. And I was not wired like that.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like it takes all kinds, but I knew very quickly that this was not a place where my opinion was welcome. Like I should have checked the door and come in and nodded and done what I was told. And that's why it lasted 4 months.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I ask because I wonder sometimes when I've been in a situation where I don't agree with the culture of an organization, how is it better, right? Is there more benefit in me staying and protecting others and maybe trying to make change, or leaving, to protect myself, basically?
It is a fine line. I mean, I've worked for two really tough bosses that I think, I mean, you know, there's some that are on the range somewhere, but two really, really tough ones. That was one of them. And I think I had tried to provide some of that feedback and I could tell it was getting very shut down. That was not a place. Cause I had the same thing. Like I can't, like, I'm not a quitter. Like I don't quit. I'm not going to walk out on these people, which is kind of why I said, you either like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to resign, but you should fire me because you're wasting money on me, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay as long as, you know, it takes to kind of get my team through this. But I had another boss who was, very tough like that too. And what I realized with her is that she was kind of like looking, she wanted to know who she could respect. Like she was looking, she didn't want doormats, but she would treat you like one until you stood up to her. Mm-hmm. And so I walked into office one day, it was about 3 months into my role, and I pulled her aside and I basically said, hey, like this isn't okay. And she was much more senior than me, of course. And I said, hey, I was like, I'm good at my job. I'm a confident leader. I've run large organizations. I've run, you know, I speak at large all hands. I speak publicly. Like I've got, and I do fine. I have no problem making decisions. I'm intelligent. Like I can do all the things, but I walk in here every day at my like full 5'3" and you kick the crap out of me all day. And I sort of crawl out of here 2 inches tall. And I was like, so if you think you're getting the best out of me, you're not, because you're killing me in the process. And there's this book, this 1 Minute Manager, I always kind of reference that says my like quick paraphrasing, but basically says like, if you're all competence and no confidence, you're just a complete waste of talent. You just crawl under the desk because you have no confidence to do your job. And the reverse says, if you're all confidence and no competence, then you're just destructive. And so I've watched both, and I was becoming the first. I was becoming this very confident leader who is getting, or this very competent leader who is getting my confidence questioned. Or I was beginning to question it. And so when I stood up to her, she like kind of like looked at me like she couldn't believe that I had said that. No one talked back to her. And she was like, okay, you're right. Let's do this. And she started pulling me into every meeting. She started bringing me into the press circle. She started coming to me with questions, with concerns when she had ideas, like she would bounce them off me first. And all of a sudden I became part of the inner circle instead of sort of the outsider that she was fighting with. And it was such a game changer. So sometimes it works to run because it's a lose-lose battle. Other times it pays to kind of communicate where you're at. And sometimes it'll totally change the game.
Awesome. I love that. And the other thing I'll just point out real quick, and then I want to hear about the sabbatical. If I heard you correctly, you were in the position. I think it was at AMD. You were in a position for 4 months before you decided to move. And this last job that you shared with us, you were there for 4 months before you decide. Like, it's almost like you have a tolerance level of, okay, 4 months and then I'm out.
That's probably right. Yeah. I was at AMD for over 5 years, but that one role.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that's my window of, okay, I've passed the 90 days. So I've given it enough time to properly get up to speed, learn the ropes, figure out where I'm at and figure out, is this the fit or not? That is where the 4 months comes from. Who knows?
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Now tell me about sabbatical. How cool. I mean, I want to hear lessons learned and all the good stuff.
Yes. I didn't know that I was going to take a sabbatical. So when I got him to fire me, it was a Monday or Tuesday, but I sat down on my couch and I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I've never been unemployed in my life. And I had asked for it, but I was still like, even when you volunteer for it, even when you know it's coming, even when it's the best thing ever, it's still an ego kick, right?
Sure.
You're still like, okay, I asked for this, but the other option is he could have fought to keep me. And instead he was like, sure. So then I was like, I got to deal with that. Fortunately, my kids were away at overnight camp that week. And so my husband and I got a lot of time to just like marinate in my you know, whatever. I got to like watch Netflix for 9 straight hours and not feel bad about it and all of the things. So
yes,
it took a week to kind of get myself sorted. I'm such an achiever that sitting and watching Netflix is like, I was working on my resume while watching Netflix, right?
Sure.
And whatever. And cleaning up my LinkedIn profile and all the things. Cause I thought, oh gosh, I got to hurry up and find another job. But so we left as soon as my kids got back from camp, we left for Lake Tahoe. And so we went to Lake Tahoe, for 1 week. And when I got back, while I was in Lake Tahoe, I was like, I have no idea how this is going to work. I got back, I had 7 CMO interviews the week I got back.
Wow.
And I was like, what was I worried? I was like, I don't know what I was worried about. The market's fine. Like there was plenty of opportunity. And I was like, here, I was stressed about like, hurry up. And I think my stress was it wasn't financial. Cause I had, you know, severance from my role. And it wasn't that my husband worked, like we had savings. It wasn't any of that. It was so dumb. It was such a perception concern about a gap on my LinkedIn profile. And I thought, what if it looks like I'm unemployed? I was like, well, I guess I can choose to update my end date whenever I feel like it, so I can just leave it alone and not do anything. But for some reason, like the gap, I never wanted to have to explain a gap. And I think all women do that, or all of us probably.
Yeah.
We feel like that if there's a gap, it looks like we were lazy or got fired and didn't have any, you know, or couldn't find a new job or whatever. And so I did all these interviews and a few of them were moving on to round two, and I'd been like back from Tahoe for like 5 days. And I was like, I'm not ready. Like this is moving faster now than I want it to move. And so I sat down with my husband. I was like, and this is like mid-July. And I was like, I feel rushed. I don't feel like I'm ready. He was like, well, why don't you take some time off? And I was like, okay. And I was like, I'm not going to look for another job until the kids go back to school, which is like mid-August. So I was like, I'm gonna give myself a month. And so I made it about 2 weeks. And then I was like, I'm not going back. Like, I'm not ready yet. And so we sat down, we looked at the numbers and we were like, let's take some real time off here. And so we gave me 6 months. But then I was like, well, that's going to really create a gap on my resume. So I changed my job title to Chief Sabbatical Officer. I said, I am taking a break. I owned it. It was no like secret of like, am I interviewing or not? It was like, no, I'm just owning this. And I said, you know, recruiters, like if you have a job, I'm not starting before January, whatever. And I let all my recruiter network know. And everybody was super supportive. I got so many notes from people saying, oh my gosh, how brave. That's amazing. I can't wait to hear about it. And I ended up, like, I just said, well, if you want to have coffee while I'm on sabbatical, let me know. I had 106 coffees over the next 6 months. It was crazy.
Wow.
And it was amazing, like, to just have that time. And by the way, it takes, as an achiever, it takes like, it probably takes 3 to 4 months before you finally don't wake up and check your email the minute you wake up.
Or
check
imagine.
Your, you know, to-do list, or check your LinkedIn inbox, or checked in, whatever. Like the day where I would be like, it's 10 a.m. and I haven't looked at my phone yet. And that's pretty amazing. So that was pretty freeing, but it does take a few months. So there is a reason that we are burned yes. out. We need that break. So anyway, and I used that time. I kind of wanted to figure out, like, what else could I do? Like, I'd been on autopilot of the next opportunity for so long, and sort of trusted the opportunities that came my way since college. I mean, I hadn't interviewed for a job since college because a friend had like called me up. Hey, I have a job for you. Come with me to this company. Hey, I have a job for you. So I kind of just followed the bouncing ball as I was taken. And all of a sudden one day I was like, okay, now I have time to figure out, what do I want to do? Not where have I been taken, but what do I want to do? So I met with VCs and private equity leaders and, you know, consultants, chief outsiders, like, you know, fractional CMO roles. I talked with startups and big companies and mentors and other CMOs and CEOs and all kinds of folks. And at the end of the day, I learned a lot about what I didn't want to do, what I did want to do. And so then when it came down to it, I wrote a book during all that time, sort of the lessons all the reflections of having sabbatical time, of like sort of the reflections on my career. And so there was a lot of that going on, and I went to every sports practice of my kids. I went to every game.
Awesome.
I never miss a game anyway, but getting to actually go watch all their football practices and all their baseball practices and all their horse lessons and everything else was amazing. And then somewhere around, late October, November, so about 4 months in, recruiters started calling and saying, okay, I know you're going back in January. Like, let's talk about where you're going to go. And that's when I kind of narrowed down to two. One was a big, large company. One was a startup, both in the CMO space. And I ultimately decided to go with the startup. I'd never done a startup. I learned during my sabbatical that marketing by PowerPoint was not as fun anymore, which is a lot of what big company CMOing is. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do marketing again. I wanted to roll up my sleeves and get tangible and know every single action that was happening on the team. And here we are.
How cool.
And now I've been here for just over 13 months now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I know that, I know that during your sabbatical, you were able to kind of look at what some of your non-negotiables were, right? What were a couple of those things in taking the next role that you weren't willing to give on?
Yeah. You know what I learned? So I learned back when I was at Rackspace, I had an opportunity to get promoted from director to senior director. It was the first time I think I had ever really voiced my sort of non-negotiables. I had one time when I was coming to Dell, I had a newborn, and then and then within a few months I was pregnant with my second one. And so in that time I had asked my boss, I said, hey, can I leave when I was accepting the job and interviewing, I said, I'd like to leave every day by 4 o'clock. And I said, and this is me taking on a new job. She didn't know me from Adam. And I said, but I will work. I said, I promise I will never get behind. I'm a highly efficient worker and I'm a hard worker, but I will log on every night. The thing is, my kid is awake from 4:30 to 7:30, not awake very long if I wait till 5:30 or 6. And so I'd like that protected time. And then I'll log in, and anything I can do at 4:30, I can also do at 8:30 or 9, and it'll be just as productive for tomorrow morning. And she was like, yeah, of course. Like, she didn't even think. Like, she was like, yes, do whatever you need to do. Like, it doesn't matter to me. And it was the first time I thought, wow, okay. So putting my stake in the ground, then I didn't have to like sneak out the door at 4:15 and hope nobody noticed. Like, she knew very clearly exactly what time I left every day. And every night I was on, and I would catch up and was able to perform well, so much so that when she left Dell and went to AMD, she took me with her, knowing the same kind of arrangement. And so when I was at Rackspace, I had another opportunity when my boss wanted to promote me from director to senior director. And I actually turned down the role two different times because I was like, nope. I was like, I am good. At that point, I think I had my third. So I had three kids, little, I think they were all under five.
Wow.
And I was like, nope, I am home every night. I am, you know, I can shut off my computer at a certain time. I'll check in as I need to, but I can pretty much manage my day job. I don't miss my kids' things. I'm not on the road. I want to do all that. And so I turned down the job because I didn't want to give that up. And I kind of thought, you know what? I'm good. I make enough money at the director level. It'll be fine. Let me get the kids off to college and then I'll come back and visit this. And she refused to take no for an answer. And so she finally, after me turning her down multiple times, finally said, you know what? I am promoting you and I am giving you more money and I am giving you a larger team. And she said, but I will protect you. I will protect your hours. I will make sure you don't travel. I will make sure that that you can get your job done in a 9-to-5 capacity. I will give you the resources to bring in additional help if you need it, should we hit that point. She really, really wanted me in that job and really believed that me in a, you know, balanced lifestyle was better at the job than hiring somebody who could work 24 hours a day and do whatever. And so I trusted that and I took the job and she did. She upheld every bit of her word. She's actually the one who then recommended me to Gartner. And so but it was so freeing to be like, man, my non-negotiables, my family, my time, things that are sacred to me can actually be part of my superpower as well. They mean that I work incredibly hard during the day. I'm highly productive, highly efficient. And I have bosses that sort of have learned to recognize that. And so when I came to Haiku, the first thing I asked my boss when I was interviewing was, hey, like I've heard horror stories about startups, that people work around the clock, that they're working all nights. And he was like, and he was very clear about that. And I said, well, I don't. I said, I can promise you I will never miss a deadline. I will get every single thing done. I will be highly productive. I will grow this marketing organization. I will accomplish everything you want me to accomplish. But I need to have the flexibility to manage that in the hours that I need to do it. Cause I do have kids and they're at, you know, and I mean, sometimes it's at night, sometimes it'll be on Saturday morning, sometimes it'll be on Sunday evening. But those are all times when my kids are still asleep or getting ready for bed or whatever that aren't, you know, that I'm not missing on anything. And even today, he said it in a meeting this morning, he said, you know, he was like, we were talking about a candidate that we were interviewing. And he said, he was like, listen, I can appreciate family. He was like, Kelly was crystal clear with me when we started that her family was never going to be the sacrifice for this job. And he said, and she's assured me that she would be high, that she would make up for any times of that. And she's delivered in every single way. And so like, I can trust if someone, you know, has that superpower of getting things done, I'm going to respect their life. And so it's just been a gift. And now as a female and I think that's probably why I do it as a female on an executive team, like in the C-suite, I carry this burden to like represent not just females, but any family members, right? Like that because if somebody's not speaking up at the ELT to say, hey, that's not fair to those people's families to make this decision. Hey, asking them to travel on this holiday or on this Sunday or whatever is not fair because I wouldn't want to do it as for my family, I think is why we have a diverse leadership team, right? To help hopefully stand up for that for the rest of the company. So,
well, what is so amazing to me is number one, your bravery in those situations, both at Rackspace and coming in and to Dell and Haiku, like coming into a role even and saying, this is it, like, this is who I am and this is what I need. And then for those leaders, for holding that for you, right? Allowing, you know, staying true to what they've committed to. And obviously you're staying true to what you committed to. I mean, you're producing and you're, you know, it's not like you said, well, I need to leave at 4 and then, you know, you're out.
After it's dropped. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's phenomenal. So what tips do you have for other leaders to be able to do this for their teams and for their organizations to really, because I think that's the key to our balance is it's not just the employee saying, here's what I need, but it's also the leader holding holding for that. And so any advice you can give to other leaders?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's about trusting your team. It's about, I mean, now it's mutual, right? They have to trust that you're going to have their back. But you have to trust that they're going to get the job done as well, which I think is super important. And I think that takes time sometimes. And so, yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, me asking for those sort of concessions as I went was because I believed and knew wholeheartedly that I would absolutely deliver on my responsibilities. So there definitely is a give and take on that. You know, I have people on my team who, when they say, hey, I've got to go deal with this kid thing, I'm like, go do it. I know it. Others, I hesitate because I know that maybe they're lacking on their productivity or their contribution performance has been not great there. So it is a little bit of a gut check on those things. I think the best thing we can do as leaders is set the example for what we expect from the team. Don't expect them to do anything that we're not willing to do ourselves. So that's one. Another one is to be very clear about objectives, right? As long as if we give people a set of objectives and a set of boundaries with which to operate that in, meaning that they need to deliver by this time period or under this budget or whatever against those objectives, then how they manage that time should somewhat be up to them. Versus if we are always operating on sort of, I need this now. Then that to me is what creates the pain, right? Because then they're not there. They're dealing with a kid thing. They're missing their mark, but it's on you because you gave them no notice of what you expected. Like I had a guy who worked for me at Rackspace, and it used to drive me crazy because I'm a planner. And so like, if something was due in 4 weeks, then I'm going to give a weekly check-in at 25%, 50, 75% progress along the way as we're tracking against this and probably finish a week or two early. This guy was, he loved deadline. So he loved to wait until 10 minutes before it was due. And then he would crank out magic, but it would kill me for the whole time up until those last 10 minutes when I finally saw progress. And he would always blow it out of the water. But it took us kind of figuring out, okay, your style is a last minute style. My style is sort of a pace as we go. And as a result, like we need to learn and trust each other's style. But once you kind of trust that each other are going to get it done, then you can kind of, you know, let people operate in the space that they need to.
Yeah. That's great. It's knowing, it's really getting to know your team, building that trust, and then operating from a place of trust.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay. Well, now I want to ask just a couple fun questions.
Sure.
So what do you do in your life that just brings you pure joy?
Oh, I love youth sports. I love kids sports. And I spend almost every waking moment that I'm not working doing something sports related. I'm either at a practice, I'm at a game, we are at the dinner table talking about that practice or that game, or we are at the gym working out and training for that that game or practice. So like this weekend, for example, my middle son had a basketball tournament. My youngest, my daughter, had a volleyball tournament. And then my middle son had a football tournament and my oldest son reffed that football tournament. Tonight we have a different football game practice and my oldest son coaches that football team. My daughter has a horse lesson. So we run sports.
Wow.
My husband is in charge of training, nutrition, like daily workouts, all the things. I'm in charge of sort of schedule logistics, making sure we get everybody where they all need to go. But I love it. There's nothing, I mean, I'll brag for a second. My son won his football tournament yesterday. His team did. He was awesome. MVP for the whole tournament because he's a stud little football player. And it's just a blast. Like there's nothing that brings me greater joy than their sports. And I could do it all day long. Like we watched 5 games on Saturday between basketball and volleyball. And I say games, 3 matches, 7 volleyball games, and then 2 basketball. And I loved every second of it, but we left the house at 8 o'clock in the morning and got home at 9:30 at night. Like we were doing it. And there's nothing I love more. Now, I think it probably helps that my kids are athletes. I guess if they weren't athletes, it might not be as fun, but it is fun because they're good at it.
Yeah, right. Very cool. And that's good. It's family time in the end. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's an interesting one. If you could go back in time and talk to your younger self, like your 5 or 6 year old self, what would you tell her?
Oh, interesting. I think I would have somehow figured out or empowered her to figure out what she wants versus trying to live up to what was expected of her. I think that, you know, I realized when I was writing this book, a lot of the theme that wove through the whole book is that my entire life, even if it was my own, my parents, somebody I can't even name, but so many of my decisions were made based on what I thought was expected of me instead of what I love doing. Now, would I have ended up in a different place? I don't know. But rather than feeling like I chose or got to, like, you know, find a place to really dream, I think I would have maybe ended up a little bit different. My son is a 15-year-old and he's a football player, runs track. He loves working out. He loves training. He loves doing agility and speed work and lifting and all the different calisthenics and all the things, getting faster and faster. And he knows without a doubt that he wants to train athletes when he grows up. Like, he's like, whether I'm like a college coach, high school coach, an individual trainer, like, I want to train kids to be stronger, faster, better at what they do. And he knows that clear as day. And I'm like, man, I love that you know that. He has zero thought in his mind that my mom expects me to be a doctor or right. my dad would like me to be a lawyer. Like, and we've never implied that, but his only like path is what he sees as something he's passionate about. And I'm like, man, I need to figure that out. He was like, what did you want to do when you were my age? I'm like, I don't have a clue. I wanted to do whatever was the most, I don't know, impressive, achievable, right. like, you know, whatever somebody might expect me to do, I wanted to exceed that. And I didn't even know, like, it didn't have a label on it other than I wanted to be successful. I wanted to achieve, yes. I wanted to move up. I wanted to something. And so to see him do that, I was like, man, I wish that I had been clear enough to like, say, what do I love to do, and figured out how to do that in some way. I don't know how to go back to that.
And I think too, it'll be interesting to see the generation of our kids and then how they parent, because I've done the same thing with my son, like, not put, like, there is no pressure. I even was like, if you don't want to go to college, like, if you want to do something that doesn't require college, like, whatever, you know, it turns out he wants to be an aerospace engineer. And so he needs college, and he's there now getting it done. But, you know, I think we, in our generation growing up, it was like, okay, you can be a doctor, a lawyer. And like, we were excited too that, oh, now women can be doctors and lawyers, you know? So like, oh, now we can do this. So let's try, you know, rather than sit with yourself and what do you really want to, you know, what's going to bring joy to you to do every day, you know?
Well, yeah. And I think we had no concept, because our parents knew doctor, lawyer,
right.
man, teacher, whatever. And so, like, I had no idea there's a million shades of gray in between of all the things you can do. Yes. Right? And so now our kids, I think, are so much more exposed to, like, whatever you can dream of, there's a job for that.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's pretty amazing. Yeah. So I love that for our generation. And I think you're right. It is probably a generational thing. And yeah, same thing. My kids want to be like, you know, they want to go be professional athletes. They want to go be, you know, D1 athletes. And I'm always like, great. I'm like, here's the deal. I love that you play sports and I want you to play sports through the end of high school. That means you're not in an alley doing drugs or hanging out with girls. Like,
right.
I'm all about it. But after that, I'll support you, whatever you want, but it's your dream, whatever dream you want. I will be your biggest cheerleader and I'm going to just follow behind and clap along. So
that is so great. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. One more question. Okay. Because I love to travel. I like hearing where other people have traveled and what's on their bucket list. So what's your most favorite trip you've taken, and then what's on your bucket list?
Ooh. So I did a lot of, I've done a lot of traveling. I did a lot by myself when I was in grad school. And before I went back to the real world after grad school. So I backpacked around, all over France and Spain and Italy and the UK and all of that. And then I spent 2.5 months in Southeast Asia working for a nonprofit in Thailand and Indonesia and Malaysia. And while I was there in Singapore and while I was there, I spent some time in Australia. So I've traveled all over the place. So now I'm like, what do I want to do with my family? Like, where do I want them to go? So our favorite family vacation. And I have a weird like thing I've learned in the last like 10 years. I don't like to do things twice, which is really odd. Like I don't rewatch movies. I don't rewatch shows. I don't like to go to the same restaurant twice. Sometimes we have to, but I don't like to. I don't like to go on the same vacation twice. So if I ever want to go on the same vacation twice, I know that it's something special. And so Watercolor Florida is the only place that we love to go like multiple times. Like we go about every other year. And we rent a house on pretty much the same street. And it's my favorite week of the year. It's like you step back in time and we ride bikes to the ice cream parlor, and it's very remote and lovely and beautiful. And so that's kind of my favorite, just family vacation. This year we're going to Costa Rica for spring break, the five of us. And we have an entire week of, my boss said, I'm sure you're staying in some luxury resort. He was like, and taking car service to the hotel. And I was like, we're staying like in a shack at the base of a volcano. And we're like hiking and, canopy, whatever you call that, zip lining and hanging bridges and canyoneering. And he was like, oh, that's not the trip I imagined. I'm like, we like adventure. My kids don't sit still. We like to do. So I'm super excited about that. And then I think my bucket list is, I was supposed to go on a trip to New Zealand many years ago, back in, I don't know, it was right after grad school, or during grad school. And a whole personal situation blew that up. And so I never got to go. And so that's always my bucket list item, is to actually get down to New Zealand, to the Southern Island mostly, and do all the things there. So that's my dream trip.
Awesome. It's kind of close. Mine's Australia, which it sounds like you've been to.
Yes.
Yeah. Australia, New Zealand is definitely my bucket list.
Yeah. That would have been all one trip for me. I was going for like a 2 or 3 week trip. And so when that sort of blew up, then when I had the chance to go to Southeast Asia, I was like, well, I'm at least going to swing through Australia for a week or so and hang out in Sydney, go to Bondi Beach and all the things. So, and it's amazing.
Awesome.
Yes.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for your time. This has just been a great conversation. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Awesome. Well, I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me. This was a delight. So thank you.
What a great conversation with Kelly. So many takeaways. Okay, here they are. Number one, being happy at work can lead to being happier at home, which makes you a better spouse, parent, friend, etc. Number two, the softer skills just can't be rushed. They get better over time. It takes more than just checking a box that you've learned a skill. It takes experience. Number three, cultures that don't welcome an outside idea create a lot of yes people and kills innovation and creativity. Number four, speak your mind and hold true to yourself. It can only go one of two ways. It doesn't make you a quitter if you speak your mind and they make the choice to let you go. Sometimes you have to leave because it's a lose-lose battle. Number five, paraphrasing from the 1 Minute Manager. If you're all competence and no confidence, you are a waste of talent. And if you're all confidence and no competence, then you're just destructive. Competence and confidence combined is what can make you successful. Number six, as an achiever on sabbatical, it can take a while to stop checking the phone, emails, LinkedIn, all the things. Just relax. Number seven, if you're able to meet expectations without compromising on your non-negotiables, that can be your superpower. A good leader will see the value in you and help you protect your non-negotiables. Number eight, leaders, it's about trusting your team that they'll get the job done. Sometimes it takes iteration to understand your team's style in completing the work. Getting to know your team, building that trust, and then operating from that place of trust is where the magic happens. Number nine, set the example for your team and be very clear about the expectations. Number 10, if we make everything urgent, always operating from an I need this now mentality, all the time, that is where we experience the pain. That's it. Thank you so much for listening. I know that I am learning so much from our guests, and I hope that you are too. If you know someone that you think can benefit from listening to the show, please share it. And if you like it, please give us a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thank you so much. Talk to you again next Friday.